I slept and dreamt that life was joy. I awoke and discovered that life was service. I acted, and behold, service is joy.
This is episode 558 on the Hidden Why podcast with Daniel Ellenberg. G'day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Hidden Why podcast. How the heck are you? Hope you're well, guys. Thank you for taking the time out of your day to tune in to another episode here at the Hidden Why. Today, guys, I'm bringing you an inspiring conversation that I had with Daniel Ellenberg. So Daniel is the co-founder of Relationships That Work. He is also the founder and director of Strength With Heart. It's a men's group that he conducts many workshops, etc. And he's also a principal in the Rewire Leadership Institute. Daniel works as a leadership coach. He's also a communication consultant, a licensed psychotherapist. He's a seminar leader, a group facilitator. And what he's all about is really helping others create more meaningful, inspiring, and resilient personal and professional lives. In this episode, I talk to Daniel about how we can really build and strengthen our relationships, both our internal relationships with ourselves and also the external relationships that we have in life. And by building and strengthening these relationships, improving our journey in life, improving the meaningful lives that we all want to live. So that's what it's all about here today with Daniel. As most of us know, that relationships is a fundamental human need. Belongingness helps us survive and increase our chances of survival. There's actually science that is now proving that when we strengthen our relationships, we can live a longer life and a greater one as well. So here it is with Daniel Ellenberg. Enjoy. Bye.
Hey, guys.
Daniel, welcome to the NY podcast. How are you going?
I am well.
That's the way. Enjoying your morning? Afternoon.
It is morning.
It is morning. Whereabouts?
Actually, we just tipped into afternoon.
You did, okay.
Just past noon.
And whereabouts are you living, Daniel, at the moment?
I live in the Bay Area in Marin County. Actually, not too far from Rick Hansen, who was our connection.
Oh, okay. There you go. Well, mate, it's quite early here as well, and we just had a brilliant big storm come through last night that woke me up and quite shocked me.
Oh, wow.
It was quite amazing. But look, ready to get started, so let's get into the interview. Daniel, there's several things that I could talk to you about, but particularly probably of interest for myself and the audience is relationships. You are the co-author of a book called Lovers for Life, Creating Lasting Passion, Trust, and True Partnership. You're also the co-founder of Relationships That Work. You're a founder of the Strength With Heart men's group. And I don't know if these are still all relevant, but one thing that caught my attention in your bio was that you actually do help others create meaningful, inspiring, resilient lives, both in their personal and professional lives as well, which is really important for me because that's ultimately what I want to do for myself, and I also want to inspire and assist others to do the same through my work at The Hidden Why. So, look, there's a lot in there, but how about you give us a little snapshot of yourself, who you are, and what you're all about?
Well, I've always been someone who's been interested in relationships, and at the same time, even from a very young age, I would view the way a lot of people related to each other. My parents didn't particularly like each other, to put it mildly. And just generally, I found that when I looked at people, they weren't actually talking about the things that they were feeling. And I could just feel that and sense that from them. So there was always a part of me that was wired to look at why people were behaving the way they did. And oftentimes I would see that what they were presenting on the outside did not seem to be in alignment with how they were on the inside. And I certainly experienced that with myself, and that the distance between my inside and outside caused a lot of pain and conflict in me. That was really what led me to really exploring psychology, philosophy, social psychology, a whole bunch of different areas to help make sense of the world. And I just think in general, we human beings have a desire and a need to make sense of the world. And we may not be accurate in terms of how we made sense of the world, but we're always giving meaning to things. And so my focus has been a lot on helping people create meaning for themselves that's actually intelligent, both emotionally and socially, and closer to the way things are, rather than whatever fantasies they have about the way things should be.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent. So obviously a connection to your past. There goes your phone. connection to your past there with watching your parents, I suppose, and their relationships as well. So is that sort of the connection to why this sparked interest initially? Is there other, you sort of talked about your own, I suppose, inner turmoil as well, and how you showed up to the world and how that differed from your inner self, I guess, or your inner being, and perhaps the discrepancy there. Is that sort of, again, why you sort of pursued this area of study?
Well, on one level, Guy, we never know why.
Hmm.
There are oftentimes many contributing aspects to why people do what they do. So I don't pretend to know all the different unconscious motivations that were in me. That said, one of the seminal moments of my life was when my father died when I was 10. I actually saw him fall to the ground and slam his head, against the ground from a heart attack. Growing up at that point fatherless certainly had huge impact on me. And it turned out that, where I was from, that was extremely unusual in that place and in that era. These days, it doesn't tend to be quite as unusual, and certainly depending on what kind of area you live in, it can be more common than not. But for me, it was a really big loss, and it led me into really becoming increasingly depressed and angry after that, which was not the case before then. So it was definitely a watershed event in my life, and that led me into becoming a pretty surly adolescent and increasingly depressed and anxious, and then really starting to turn it around in my really, when I was 20, I got into therapy for the first time and started actually becoming more open about what was going on in my inner world, which was incredibly painful, and I felt ashamed of it, and I wasn't talking with anyone about it, which does tend to be pretty epidemic in a lot of males, shame about not living up to a certain belief about how you should be as a man, as a male. And hiding about that, not talking with anyone, and then you dig a deeper kind of emotional grave, so to speak.
Okay. Do you think that that sort of expectation that you felt within yourself and why you weren't living up to it was because of the loss of your father? You sort of didn't have that guidance, or was it something else entirely?
Well, again, it's hard to say exactly why. I had a controlling mother. I had a environment that was very competitive. There were some burglaries and murders going on in my neighborhood, in a kind of middle class neighborhood in New Jersey, which was rather strange. So there were a lot of pulls that led me to feel pretty insecure, and no doubt that was a major contributor.
Okay. Look, I heard recently, not heard, but I sort of just put together based on a few conversations, and it sort of made sense to me that everything in life is based on relationships, and nothing is independent. Everything is dependent on relationships. What is your take on that?
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, when you think about it, we are born into this planet in relationship. I mean, it's every one of us grows inside of a woman, and who gives birth, and we don't survive without relationship. And I think about how Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Yeah,
most people have really heard of that, and there seems to be something a little challenged about it because it doesn't actually have relationships at the bottom part of survival. Without relationships, we don't survive. I mean, little infants, born, there's no way you survive without relationships. So every aspect of our lives is relational, and some people may choose to go off and live by themselves, or they can somehow afford to do that and do everything online, but their thoughts are relational anyway. You know, so we come to know who we are in relationship to other people. And indeed, some of the more recent research in the brain is showing what they're calling the social brain, which really shows the many and varied different ways that we're connected.
Yeah.
You know, we are impacted by each other's moods. There's a term in neuroscience called emotional contagion, which is basically that emotions can be contagious. Mm. And we know that. I mean, this is common sense. Somebody starts yelling, all of a sudden your nervous system, you know, gets activated. Someone's kind to you, it activates a different part of your brain. And so we are who we are, not in isolation ever. Even though ironically we can feel isolated, but when we feel isolated, it's because we're not feeling connected. Mm. And so we're thinking relationally anyway.
Yeah, okay. And look, to Maslow's defense there, I mean, he talks about belongingness, and I guess there's the link to relationships, which is higher in the food chain. But perhaps he was just less knowledgeable back then about how our psychological being is so connected to our overall well-being and relationships in life as well.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a wonderful book about this called Social. You know, I think it's Social, How We're Wired to Connect.
I'll have a look and see if I can find that one. I was going to say, on that, so the need for relationships seems to be apparently important in our life. And certainly there's a lot of studies too now around, you know, that I think that social aspect of our lives and various studies about how it actually is a key element to how long we live for.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. You know, think about, there was actually an Australian palliative nurse who sat with a lot of people who were dying, and she asked them about themselves, and she came up with a list of five different regrets, called it the deathbed regrets, you know, that people had. And it turned out that pretty much they're all in about relationships. I wish I had been more honest in my relationships. I wish I had not let go of old friends. You know, I wish that I had had the courage to speak up. And, you know, so the way people orient, you know, in life is always in relation to others. You know, it's like, who are you winning against? Who are you losing against? Who are you loving? You know, who are you caring for? Who are you competing with? I mean, it's always in relationship.
Bronnie Ware, I think it is, isn't it? Top Regrets of the Dying. I think she's she's the author of that. And really, really powerful book. And certainly the top regret is something that I'm, very aware of. And that's not to live a life, to live a life true to yourself, not what others expect of you.
Right.
All right, let's go into some relationships, some talks there about both our inner relationships and the external relationships that we have as well. And perhaps then from each of those points, just share some thoughts and practices, perhaps how we can improve that. In my personal experience in life, relationships aren't always my strong point. I've got a lot of other strong points potentially, but relationships is still one of those areas that, I'm guilty for, not being perfect with. And perhaps it's something to do with that discrepancy between inner and outer, as you sort of mentioned before. But what are we talking about when we're talking about our inner relationships?
I think we're talking about how we're related to different parts of ourselves. You know, the term self-awareness, I think it's not thorough enough. I call it selves awareness. You know, that we have a multitude of different selves or parts to our personalities, and they can at times be in conflict with each other. You know, on the simplest level, you know, part of us wants to lose weight and be healthy and everything. Part of us wants the chocolate cake. Yep. You know, so each part or self has different values, i.e. what it deems important. And behaviors tend to flow from those different values. So for example, you know, someone wants to really connect with somebody else and be open and loving, and they attempt to do so, but the other person doesn't respond in a way that person is wanting. And so they get hurt. and that activates a different part. And then they want to, they either want to withdraw at that time or potentially get angry at that person, which and act that out. And so, like, if you look at, like, one part's the hurt, upset part, and the other part's the part that wants to be loving and caring and all, they don't always go walk together in lockstep. And so depending on if one's what I would call their threat defense system gets activated, if it does, they're going to be act defensively. It'll be one or more of the basic defense groups. They'll fight, and I don't necessarily mean just physically. They can be emotionally fighting. They can be fleeing, running away from the scene on some level, you know, freezing, getting really numb, not showing much of anything, or appeasing, you know, pretending to be caring and sweet and all that, but really as a way to acquiesce and not potentially trigger the anger of somebody else or the upset of somebody else. We certainly have many, many different parts, and you know, some parts, like what you're talking about, Guy, is like you're probably pretty gosh darn happy about certain parts of yourself, you know, and other parts not so much. You know, so how do you become aware of all those different parts and really bring compassion to them?
Yeah.
Because, you know, whatever we do that is, shall we say, unskillful or unmindful, you know, has consequences both to ourselves and to other people. And, you know, that can be hard. You know, you don't live up to certain expectations. Who does? You know, you used the word perfect before, right? I think that's a word that could be removed from human language because it's just not, doesn't come with the perfect territory.
Yeah. Yeah. And but I think really, that's one expectation that sort of brought about through our society. And certainly, yeah, I did just use it in a sentence and I probably shouldn't and discard it from my thought processes of vocabulary, but again, that's just how we look at ourselves and the different aspects of who we are, whether that's, you know, something that's we consider a good aspect or perhaps not such a good aspect.
Right, and what we've seen is that when each of us can approach and be aware of those aspects that on some level we prefer were not there, but bring kindness to that part and curiosity about what purpose is it serving, then we're in a much better position to not kind of act that out more unconsciously. You know, so for example, if I have a really highly developed self-critic, I'm really, really critical of myself, but I don't want to be feeling that. I might drink too much. I might go off on, you know, expensive trips. I might do a whole bunch of things to forget that that part can be rather dominating, but it always has a way of being there or coming back, and then I'll create more problems for myself by not dealing with it directly. But if I can look and go, well, maybe that self-critical part of me is actually trying to get me to be more motivated to work harder, to do better on some level, and when I don't, then it gets harsh. But the problem is the harshness actually leads toward threat, an internal threat, which leads toward defenses, which doesn't necessarily lead toward kind of a positive or skillful action in response to that.
Yeah.
You know, so you look at, well, what might be the positive purpose, but then also, like, take a look at what the negative method is, and is that method that has not led toward any particular type of behavioral change suddenly magically going to lead to one, or would it be wiser to change one's approach to that and actually kind of calm down that threat system by practicing compassion and then actually being able to deal with whatever might be missing in a more direct fashion?
Yeah, okay. So those parts of ourselves, I mean, does it come down to fulfilling ultimately our needs in life, and perhaps somehow it's all connected back to the ultimate need of life, and that is to survive. I think everything leads back to there, whether it's correct or not. But I mean, really, is that the inner self, the things that we're responding to, the aspects that we either like or not like of ourselves, we're always going out there then to fulfill those various needs to appease that part.
Absolutely. I mean, on some level, you think about what would it be, what would motivate any of us to do anything? You know, there's something that we want, you know, and you know, of course, those wants can be split. We could want something, but another part of us doesn't want that. You know, we want to, you know, be successful, but we don't want to work for it.
Yeah.
So to be aware of those different parts, I think it's a really crucial part.
Really good starting point anyway. And you did mention that, so awareness, you know, selves awareness, as you say.
Right.
And so that starts with awareness, and that is a practice in itself. So what do you suggest there for people listening? Because it's certainly, you know, mindfulness meditation is something that's helped me with my awareness and really helped, I suppose, just calm down that inner selves a little bit more, so I can just understand them better and then, I suppose, respond in a more positive way rather than using negative methods to deal with things right. that perhaps I dislike or need to sort out. But yeah, what are your thoughts on awareness and how to, you know, go about creating greater awareness?
Right. Well, I make a distinction between mindfulness and awareness.
Yep.
You know, and again, they're just words on one level. Some people can practice mindfulness for decades and yet not be aware of, you know, what's actually motivating them. You know, what are the different self parts that, you know, lead toward them doing things where, you know, they want, you know, caring, but then they'll be nasty, you know, to get not even be aware that there's some, they're not aware of a part of themselves that actually wants to punish other people, you know, because they haven't given them what, you know, what you wanted on some level. And those shadow parts are really a crucial piece. And again, you can be mindful about many different things, but not be aware of some deeper motivations. But the ideal is to be mindful and aware,
yeah.
You know, and to notice. There was a Scottish psychiatrist named R.D. Lang many moons ago, wrote a whole bunch of books, and one of his quotes about awareness was, he said, "The range of what we think and do is limited by what we fail to notice. And because we fail to notice that, we fail to notice. There's nothing we can do to change until we notice how failing to notice shapes our thoughts and deeds." You know, and when you think about it, the more that you can notice different kind of action potential, so to speak, things that could turn into behaviors before they actually happen, to be able to reflect, be reflective rather than reflexive, and we can notice a part that may not be so intelligent if it were to come out before it comes out, that's a great thing. There's Viktor Frankl, who wrote Man's Search for Meaning, and he's talking about, you know, in between stimulus and response, you know, the potential to pause. You know, and essentially that's what we're talking about, because when we're able to pause, we are bringing more of our prefrontal cortex online. We're not simply reacting from our kind of more limbic amygdala areas that have been conditioned to react habitually, but not necessarily intelligently.
Gotcha. You know, so really mindfulness is sort of about noticing what is happening, and whereas awareness is more about what, the knowledge of what's happening?
Yeah, more of the self-knowledge about what different parts, you know, there are involved. And again, that's my definition. It's not necessarily everyone.
It's just interesting to reflect on. So maybe awareness is more about just the knowledge in this context of the inner relationships that are going on in our lives.
Yes,
and
right.
And mindfulness is that ability to just notice it. And then again, you know, going to that, what you just said about Viktor Frankl, is that stimulus and response, so noticing what thought is triggering a certain aspect in your life, and then being able to pause before you behave, because as you say, and we know that, you know, our behaviors can certainly lead to more suffering or pain or adversity in our lives, and that's going to again, you know, flow on to perhaps negative methods of us dealing with our lives, and therefore never solving or improving those relationships. Have I captured that okay?
I was actually sitting here thinking that is very well put.
Look, what I'd like to just ask in relation to relationships, how do we, I mean, obviously awareness and mindfulness are two things. How do we then go about, improving those inner relationships? And beyond that, is there anything else that you typically would talk about or work with others?
Well, I will always ask, excuse me, I will always ask people, what are they wanting? Like, what's your North Star? What are you aiming toward? Which is really another way of trying to uncover what are someone's essential values. You know, if you look at a value as something that's really, really important to somebody, and ideally, we are always moving in the direction of certain essential values in our lives. You know, if it's to feel peaceful, then what are the principles and practices that can lead to an inner experience of peace? If it's to create a certain kind of success, what does that success look like? And then what types of strategies and tactics will most likely bring about that success? Mm. And of course, always looking at course correction, meaning that we're often off course, but we can potentially notice that we're off course and course correct.
Yeah.
And indeed, that's one of the metaphors that's used in sailing, even flying in a plane or off course, and you just get feedback and you kind of get back on course. So depending on what values you have, you may develop some goals in relation to those values. You know, so for example, if I value love, then I might have a goal of getting into a relationship with a woman, get married. I mean, I've already done that. I've been married for a long time, but I mean, I did have that goal. And so I learned different ways of, being the better me rather than the lesser angels of my nature, shall we say.
Yeah.
And so I could lead more with those. And so a goal is something that can be accomplished. A value is not. A value really sets a certain kind of direction, that we're going in. I know one of my big behavior changes is having grown up in a pretty sarcastic, pretty hostile environment, I naturally internalize those types of attitudes and behaviors. And what I found was that it was really good at pushing people away.
Hmm.
But on one level, I didn't want that. On another level, a shadowy part of myself didn't want that because it was a habit, it was a bad habit. And as I became more aware of that tendency, I could actually see that quick little quip I was going to make before I said it. That's part of where the mindfulness part of it, noticing it before, like the horse gets out of the corral, so to speak. And so I could go, no, when I look at my value about wanting more love, wanting more connection versus being clever, or being sardonic or sarcastic, I'm going to choose the one that the value that's based on more connection.
Yeah.
So that puts me in a different position to make choices.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so part of what my work is with people is to help them, with that process and really look at, shall we say, the better angels and the lesser angels of our, maybe not just nature, but our nurture also, and making more conscious choices about how do you want to be,
hmm.
Because if you want to be a kind person, but you're actually pretty hostile, then part of the path is to really look at, well, what's the value of being kind? What do I really, really want? Not necessarily what did I learn, because there are oftentimes in life we learn things that on deeper inspection and reflection, we look and go like, just because my father did that or my grandfather did that or kids in the neighborhood or whatever, it's really not what I want.
Yeah.
And then you get to sit back and reflect. I'm sure, for you, you've learned things that you go like, I don't really want to continue that.
Yeah, certainly it helps me. And again, going back to that awareness and mindfulness certainly allows me to sort of reflect on that and course correct. And that's really powerful, what are you wanting in your life? And I think like that's anything in life. We could ask ourselves that question. And I think the issue for many of us is that we're just so busy these days. We don't take the time to really stop and pause, and that causes us to really focus. It causes a lot of different issues, I guess, but really to focus on our self needs rather than the compassion need of others. The compassionate, you know, compassion for others. You mentioned compassion before several times, but certainly I think that sort of that compassion allows us to take the focus off ourself. Not that means we need to let go of that focus, because I think there's certain work we need to do internally as well, but really to stop and think about others in that situation as well. And yeah, I mean, if you could get to the deep depth of every relationship in our lives and really say, well, what do I want from this relationship? Is it something I want, or how can I improve it? Then that's going to certainly help by using a few of those points that you just raised as well.
Yeah, and even your question, Guy, saying, how can I improve it, you know, is an important one. Because when you ask questions like that, your mind, which is kind of like an internal internet search, will start looking for ways to improve it. If you ask, like, why is that person such a jerk? You know, it's like your mind is going to naturally tune into, I call, like, internal websites that are all like, why that person's a jerk?
Yeah.
Kind of thing. So
even look at it and go, you know, why is that person a jerk? And perhaps, well, why do I think that person's a jerk? You know, you'd find all those searches as well, just in that one question, I think. So, look, powerful stuff. I've got some questions here, Daniel, that I want to ask you. I ask all guests these questions, so I'm just going to pull them up. They're sort of my quick round questions that I flow through with each guest. So let's see.
Can I say one thing first?
Yeah.
Related to what we're just talking about, you know, why is that person a jerk? I like to ask questions like, how do I imagine that person regards me? You know, or what's a story I tell myself about how that person feels toward me?
Yeah.
Because that's going to kind of bring up a certain kind of projection, like that person doesn't like me. Okay? And then I go, well, but I'm triggered about that. And then the next step would be like, how do I not like myself? You know, because as Eleanor Roosevelt, who was, you know, the wife of one of our great presidents, said, no one can make you feel bad about yourself without your agreement. You know, so there's some level that when we get activated,
yeah,
but
that's a good one.
Yeah, triggering some self-identity piece,
yeah,
you know, in ourselves. So ultimately, it keeps coming back to how can we go deeper in ourselves. Okay, so that said, you had some questions for me. So
yeah, again, it goes back to that level of awareness and mindfulness on those things as well. And yeah, you're right. Like if something aggravates you or there's some sort of aversion in your life, you know, by just reflecting on that and thinking about it, perhaps you'll come to some sort of deeper message there that can help you resolve it as well. Yeah, cool. The first question I have is, what sort of routines or rituals do you believe contribute to your success in life?
Well, I mean, basic ones like meditation, I very rarely miss a day.
Yep.
Exercise is just a way, you know, of de-stressing, really kind of recognizing that, you know, people are valuable, you know, and counting my blessings for the wonderful people in my life, including my wife.
Yep.
Being nature. You know, I notice, you know, a difference just being outside. I live in a very natural environment.
Yep.
that feeds me. And learning, you know, learning new things. They say you're either learning or you're dying on some level. I prefer the learning part, you know.
Perfect. What advice would you give to your 20-year-old self?
I would say, pay more attention to your impact and recognize that you have a choice over that. You know, also that even if you feel totally alone, you're not. That other people suffer also. You're not suffering more than other people.
Yeah.
I just have practiced more self-compassion and more compassion for others.
Yeah, really important. I like that one. How do you define success, or what does success look like to you?
Success is the realization of one's values. You know, one person, their success might be to make a lot of money, and if they do, then they're successful. Another, to have a lot of great loving relationships, and if they do, they're successful. You know, someone might be success is going on lots of different adventures.
Yep.
And if they do, they feel successful, and which is not to say that people only have one value. I think it is the degree to which people are kind of successfully adhering to, expressing their core essential values. That's success.
Okay, excellent. I like that one. Now, what is one tool, skill, resource, or technique that has helped you to improve your overall productivity or effectiveness in life?
I think about what impact I want to have.
Yep.
No, it's not. So when I'm doing a workshop or presentation, I'm thinking about the audience, you know, and what, you know, what do I know, or at least kind of know, that would be helpful for some people to know?
Yeah.
And how can I not assume that they already know that? You know, like, what have I learned that I can kind of pass it on, you know, as it were?
Yeah, I like that. So it's sort of about putting, or being a bit more purposeful in your actions. Certainly will help.
I'll say one. There's a an Indian poet named Tagore who said, one of his poems was, I slept and dreamt that life was joy. I awoke and discovered that life was service. I acted and behold, service is joy. You know, and to really recognize that when we serve other people, we tend to feel better. I mean, being just completely selfish generally doesn't lead toward happiness.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah, I believe you're absolutely right with that one. And I think a lot of people share, well, a lot of the people that I interview share that at least. And yeah, it seems to be coming more and more sort of common knowledge out there as well as people in society becomes more aware. Of the impact that we make individually.
Yep.
What advice would you give someone that is looking to make a change in their life?
I would ask them, really, what do you really want?
Yeah.
And to maybe go off in the woods for, you know, some time and take a look at that, take a look at what they really want, and ask themselves, what do I really value in life?
Yeah.
And to see if what they're really valuing is in harmony with what they're actually doing. Now, there is the guy who coined the term self-esteem, Nathaniel Brandon, many decades ago. One of his definitions of self-esteem was the relationship between your values and behaviors. In other words, if your behaviors are very close to your values, you're going to feel self-esteem. If your behaviors are very far away from, i.e. the delta is very large, you're not going to feel very good about yourself. Mm-hmm. So spending some time really looking at what are your values. Sometimes people have a hard time coming to that themselves, and there are a whole bunch of values inventories,
yeah,
you know, that are out there that can help people become more, you know, clear about those values themselves. But I think it's certainly true that if you're not following what's important to you, you're not going to feel good.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree, and I think that was a turning point for me where I started to live more integrally to that inner, you know, the inner values and what I wanted in life rather than not, because how I was showing up and how I was being was totally two different things, which was causing me a lot of inner pain or suffering or, yeah, turmoil, I guess. Couldn't agree more. If I was to serve you your last meal, what meal would you request?
Deep dish pizza.
Deep dish pizza. What?
I say that. It's funny I say that because I'm gluten free, and I keep away from carbs, so I always and I love pizza, but I just don't eat it.
Mm.
But if I only had one meal, I'd have lots of pizza, and, you know, maybe some calamari. Anyways.
It's the most common response after 500 episodes. Most common response I get is pizza. So there you go.
Interesting.
What activity gives you the greatest sense of joy?
I'd say connecting with close people in my life.
Yep.
It's not always the case, but just when those moments where it just feels like we're really in sync and in harmony and creativity and having fun, laughing. you know, and sometimes going from laughter to tears, you know, in moments, feeling deeply with others.
Excellent. If you could pick one book to pass down to your children or future generations, what book would you choose?
You know, I think at the moment I would choose Mistakes Were Made, But Not By Me. And that's a book about cognitive dissonance. And if I were to, if someone asked me, if you were to choose the number one kind of discovery in psychology that has the greatest impact, not to say it has all the impact and not that others don't have, I would say cognitive dissonance, because it's really the way people's brains are wired to think that they're always right, you know, and to disconfirm evidence that contradicts how you want to see the world. I mean, we look at politics, you know, we look at gender relationships, we look just about anywhere. People will look at buying a home, selling a home, but people, we tend to be self-interested in the way we understand things, and we'll, you know, our brains will be facile enough to change the facts to fit our fiction.
I'll have to look at that one and get that myself, because it sounds certainly like one I'd like to read. So thanks for sharing. And guys, I'll stick it in the show notes too. So if you're interested in supporting the show, do use the Amazon links there to pick up a copy of that book. And I'll stick a link of Daniel's book as well that he co-authored, called Lovers for Life. What quote, phrase, or message would you text or tweet to everyone in the world?
I might have done the one I just said before, but I think about one. Let me think about it. On self-awareness, this is by a neuropsychologist, Louis Cozzolino. He said, "Mother Nature hasn't seen fit to invest much neural architecture in self-awareness." You know, and so the fact that we just are beginning as a species to become more self-aware, or selves aware, I think is a huge statement, and still we're in our infancy. And so I think that the quote may inspire kind of a deeper level of reflection or introspection into, okay, well, it's hard to get to know yourselves, get to, you know unconscious motivations. There's not a lot of wiring there, but what can I do, you know, to learn about that? And I think that there are different ways of getting feedback. You know, I'm a strong believer in getting feedback from other people. You know, my professional work has been, you know, to some significant degree founded in, like, in even working with intact teams, having people give each other feedback, because we ourselves do not see ourselves like other people do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And so having trusted others that you can learn from. And you may not like everything you hear, but you may need to hear that stuff in order to make improvements. You know, that's a good thing. I know for me that I certainly wouldn't be the person I am now if I hadn't gotten and used a lot of the feedback that I received over the years.
Pretty important. Do you believe we all have a why, a purpose?
I'm not sure about that one.
Yeah.
You know, I think that some people do and some people may or may not. I know that some people believe you're born with this purpose that only you yourself can do. And I'm an agnostic, you know, and I don't know.
Yeah.
I sometimes think yes, sometimes think no.
Okay. What does living life with passion and purpose mean to you?
It means that I'm alive, you know, that my eyes are open, my ears, I'm seeing, I'm hearing, I'm feeling, I'm tasting, I'm touching. You know, I'm not just sitting around thinking,
yeah.
You know, but interacting and, you know, being in the world in a meaningful way, you know, that makes a positive difference. And, you know, we'll have some fun at the same time. You notice I keep emphasizing fun. I think that, like, I think play and fun is not emphasized enough, and it is a major way that we human beings connect with each other.
Yeah, it needs to be more often, less seriousness about things that perhaps don't have that much relevance in the thick of it all, or at the end of it all.
Exactly.
I'd agree. What do you believe is the main motivation behind everything that you do in your life? The driving force?
I think it's about feeling good in some level. You know, feeling good, feeling happy, and
feeling good. Yeah.
feeling, you know, natural joy in life.
Yeah, I'd agree. I'd absolutely agree with that one. Look, Daniel, thank you for coming on the show today. It's been an absolute pleasure talking with you. How can the audience best reach out to you? What's the best way to connect with you?
Well, my email is daniel@rewireleadership.com. That's R-E-Wire, you know, I-R-E, leadership.com. You can get on the Rewire Leadership website. There's a lot of great resources that mainly my wife has written a whole bunch on there. I've done a little bit. She's done most of it. And then their other website is Relationships That Work. T-H-A-T, you know, relations, that, T-H-A-T, work.com. Okay. So those are ways that, you know, look in and, you know, to see what we're up to.
Excellent. Look, I'll stick the links in the show notes, guys. Check it all out. Thank Daniel for coming on the show. Daniel, been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
My pleasure as well. You be well.
You too. Thanks, guys. Okay. Check it all out, thehiddenwhite.com. Until next time, peace, passion.
See you soon. Take care.
Thanks, guys, for listening to this episode. I hope you enjoyed what you heard. I hope you love what you're hearing. If you like this episode, guys, or any of the episodes that you're listening to here at The Hidden Why, please do me a favor by sharing it. You can share it with your families. You can share it with your loved ones. You can do that by using your favorite social media channels, using the icons on the platform that you're listening to The Hidden Why podcast. Also, guys, if you're a fan of the show, please connect with me. Connect with me at thehiddenwhite.com. I love to hear from you. I love to converse with the people that listen to this show to find out what they enjoy, what they don't enjoy, and perhaps if they have any questions or feedback for the show as well. You can stay up to date with all that I'm releasing here, guys. I do a solo show every Monday, a 3-minute thought every Thursday. I do 2 interviews a week on a Wednesday and a Saturday, and a book review every Friday. You can stay up to date with all that by subscribing to my newsletter at thehiddenwhite.com. Just enter your email address there. And also subscribing to the podcast on the platform that you choose to listen to your podcast. You can also support the show, guys, by using the Amazon links at thehiddenwhite.com. So if you like books, you can get all the books that I review there. And anything else, really, that you like to purchase through Amazon. So use that link and help support the show. And we've also got a deal with Audible, guys. Audible is a fantastic way to listen to all your favorite books. We've got a deal with them so you can get 2 free books when you subscribe subscribe to a 30-day free trial. So check that out, again, at thehiddenwhite.com. Guys, that's it from me. You know what to do. Go out there, breathe more passion into every single moment. Do everything with greater purpose. And in doing so, you will discover your hidden why. This is The Hidden Why. My name is Lee Martin. Until next time, peace, passion, and purpose. See you soon.